Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to episode 11 of the Love in the Mirror podcast. I'm Shannon Bodie, your host, and just thank you, everyone, for being with us in the first 10 episodes of this delightful journey. We're taking a little bit of a different direction these next 7 episodes, where we go into a series of the Love in the Mirror class. So some of you may be joining us, and some of you may not, but I wanted to get our content out there so that you can listen along with us and celebrate the steps that our members bravely are taking in this course and try on some of the techniques for yourself. So you're welcome the next 7 weeks to join me as I walk us through the process and some live examples, both from my own journey and in dear sweet confidentiality, some of the beautiful wisdom that's come through from our brave members walking the walk in this course. So thank you for joining us for this next subset in the Love in the Mirror podcast, mirroring the class itself. This is Love in the Mirror, and I'm Shannon Bodie, your host. Thanks for being with us. Thanks, everyone. Welcome back. So to give us a little background of what you can expect this episode and the next 6, what we're doing on the back end with Inner Peace Rising LLC, my coaching business, and dear clients walking through our first ever Love in the Mirror class is taking a journey of where can we love and accept ourselves more? Where can we actually operationalize that, put it into practice in very practical ways rather than this esoteric idea, right? I'm going to love myself. It's a beautiful intention. It also really helps to ground it and anchor it in practice to see what that looks like. We do that for the first half of the course. In the second half, we take that into mirror, right? Into where things are being mirrored in relationship, because we don't practice in a vacuum, right? The world reflects back to us, sometimes really lovingly and sometimes in very challenging ways, places where we can work and refine our practice in the scope of relationship and look at different coping skills that might be more skillful at this stage in our life in any nature of relationship, be that with significant others, children, dear friends, family of origin members, community members, coworkers, you name it. So my intention over the next 7 weeks is to share with you all some of those ideas, those practices, to be vulnerable and share some of why I needed to launch this at this point in my career, at this point in my life, and walk the walk with you all. So the next 7 weeks, you'll get a little bit of a snippet. What are members going through in the course? Really incredibly brave women who are walking the walk and looking at their stuff, but in ways that can be fun and be supported. So I honor their confidentiality and privacy, but I share some of their incredible wisdom that has come forth from their exploration. So where do we start in this practice? Today, we look at the first couple of courses, and it's a nice combination of the why and the how. First, when we're looking at making a change in our own lives, we got to know why it matters, right? And really anchoring in the why. And this isn't new information. It's really a blend of a lot of incredible teachers, researchers, scientists in habit science, in spiritual tradition, but really getting clear on anchoring. If we're looking at making a change, our why needs to be very aligned with our highest interest, our highest purpose. And when I say highest interest, it's not in any kind of a selfish way, but something that we know will uplift us. Especially if we're making a change and a why that's about loving ourselves, accepting ourselves, or we're looking for some outer change, right? If the new behavior we're looking for in ourselves isn't anchored in some deep loving intention, We might still make the change. But I ask you, why would you be making it? Is it because we want something to look better on the outside? Is it to please another, but it's not aligned with our source, our deep, innate inner wisdom? Then we can risk getting into trouble, and not from a fear-based place. I've made a lot of changes from those outside external motivators, right? We all do. And it's also okay for outside external motivators to be aligned with our internal source and purpose. And when those things match up, oh my goodness, it becomes a much more easy, smooth, graceful process where we're banging up against ourselves less. And I just love to share that process with you all. And I know those of you listening have experienced this when you're making decisions in alignment with your truth, whatever that resonates as with you, versus banging up against something because you're trying to please another person. Or the change you're trying to make just isn't happening because maybe you're bumping into some coping strategies or old patterns that are really tough to change. We'll cover that here. So getting into the why. I ask you as you're listening, if there's a change that in that deeper seeking of peace or of love or acceptance, perhaps deeper trust of yourself, perhaps getting out of your own way in a little bit, what that change might be, and take that with you over the next few episodes. You'll get a lot out of it. Just play with it. See what happens. What's that change or potential new habit? Maybe it's a way of relating to yourself. And why is it important to do it? Why does it matter for us to love and accept ourselves more? For many of us, myself also in that camp, we may find it much easier to make changes on behalf of others. That's okay to harness too. So if it doesn't matter first to love and accept yourself more, for yourself, for your own sake, who might benefit in your life? If it wasn't from, you know, let's say, I think we get confused about over-ego or overconfidence or perhaps a selfish motivation when we're talking about self-love. This isn't that type of self-love. Our ego is important. We're not here to demonize that in this process either. Bless the ego. It has to do a lot in the world and navigate things. But when we're coming from a fueled place where we see ourselves with the grace, the dignity, the respect that we innately deserve as our birthright, who else will benefit from that radiant light and energy? How will your kids benefit from that? How will your community or your clients benefit from that full, beautiful cup if you see yourself for the light, grace, joy, incredible talent, and beauty that you actually are? Not when X, Y, and Z get fixed, not when the 10 pounds are lost, not when this financial goal is met right now as you are innately. Who would benefit from that? Who would benefit from your light coming through unapologetically without blockage? Who needs that energy in the world? Perhaps that's the place to look first for inspiration. So if our why isn't anchored, it's hard to let it see us through the challenges of how to get through a change, right? When we face coping strategies, breaking down patterns, we need a really strong why. We need to know why it matters. Because when we face the pattern and habit change, we're going to want to go back to what's comfortable. That's just the sweet, dear function of our nervous system, our reptilian brain, our amygdala functioning, our limbic system. It's comfortable. Even if it doesn't serve us anymore, we go back to what we know, especially when we're bravely facing a new identity. So get really clear on the why. And I don't know what that is for you, dear ones. But oh my gosh, please let me know what your why is. Reach out on Inner Peace Rising shannon@innerpeacerising.com. You can email me, shannon@innerpeacerising.com. You can also check in on our Facebook page. Share what your why is. Share what that is. If you're having trouble getting to the why, we can work with that too. But finding one that matters, you feel it in your gut. You feel it in your heart. You get tingly when you think about it in a good way. And perhaps a little bit scared. Because that's right at the edge of great change. So that's my first invitation for you all. My personal why that I'll share was in my journey a little bit, just over a year ago. There are a lot of big changes I've made in my life and learnings from making not so skillful choices based on the information I had in front of me. And a little over a year ago, I knew that I was looking at my eating and drinking patterns. Not because anything was significantly out of whack, but I knew I was using them in a way that didn't quite serve me with integrity. I was preparing a lot of great, beautiful change in my own life, preparing to move from my home community of Flagstaff and dear tribe there to merge homes and blend families with my beloved and come home to a city that had some triggers for me about moving home. And it was all this lovely, amazing change, right? I also went into savor mode, celebration mode with my girlfriends and lots of last evenings, right? Wine celebrations and staying up late packing. And I returned to some very old patterns from my 20s that resembled a lot of coping overeating or drinking more than I needed to out of moderation and then needing to eat more to try to balance out my blood sugar. And this is after years of work on those patterns and where they came from, a lot of compassionate work with that, years of yoga study and healing work, my own coaching and therapy, and I started to see those things pop up again. And then my stepmom passed away. And she was one of the richest anchors in my life. She truly, in every way of the word, blows away every stereotype we think of when we think of stepmoms. She was a dear, precious parent in my raising, in my upbringing for 30 years. So we had moved back to Phoenix, surprise. 5 days later, we hosted Christmas in our new home, beautiful new beginning. The next day, my stepmom entered hospice after a long and arduous battle with dementia. And our home became the hub for visiting, for family, for all the things that we were intentional about, my fiance and I. But that rug, as you know, dear ones, when we lose one of our core, dearest people that is a part of our very being, everything gets turned upside down. So you can imagine what happened to those patterns of coping with eating and drinking. They weren't going anywhere for me. And then, by grace of divine intervention, I was starting this course, this Body Thrive course with Kate Stillman, that started to look at your habits and what do they look like. I was joining it for CEUs, for yoga education, for coaching, and my gosh, what perfect timing it was. You'll hear a lot of her wisdom as I talk through this series. But what helped me anchor in that as I entered that year of transformation was looking at my beloved ones around me. They were patient. They knew I was grieving. They knew what was going on. I also saw that I was in deep grief, deep change, and I didn't want to let my people down. I wanted to be as compassionate for myself and as present for them as I possibly could. And so part of what mattered, even in my deep waves of crippling grief that still come up, because grief does that, yes, was to remember I have done significant work my whole life for the divine partnership that we have manifested here and the blending of families that we are consciously co-creating together. And I don't want to miss this. And I don't want to fall back into coping patterns that don't serve me or them. That was my why. I can ride the waves. I can feel the deep feelings. It's going to suck. There's no way around it. But I'm here now and I don't want to miss this. Finally, this beautiful, loving opportunity of family creation. So that was my why. And that's what helped me anchor the scaling back of coping strategies that weren't as useful, the replacement of some that were, into a deeper pattern of change. And coming into a whole new layer of health and well-being that I get to play with and watch now on a daily basis. And it was not simple. So please know any example I give, I share that because I don't ever want there to be this elevated facilitator wisdom of, I have this figured out. No, this is the real life learning lab, everyone. It's very, very real. And it's in that real sharing, I think, with grace, with bumpers in the bowling alley and boundaries, of course, that you all get to hear, oh, she's actually doing this stuff. This is not preachy. This is not any shoulding upon any of you, dear listeners. I'm in it with you. So that's the why. And one of the things we've got to do in that why is invite all of the support possible. So what's that next piece? Anchor in what your why is, and then let people know you're getting ready to make a change, right? I always make that analogy of psychic surgery. If you know you're going into the hospital for procedure, you let people know if you know about it. Sometimes we don't have the grace of knowing about it, right? But you let family members know, or you align with caregivers. You let people know to bring in your mail. You make some steps to prepare. If you're getting ready to make a change about loving and accepting yourself more, or whatever that change is, you take preparation steps, right? These are the stages of change preparation, by the way. We love those things. Great, amazing research on the trans-theoretical model of change that looks at preparation as a very useful stage, getting ready. Who do you need to let know that this is what you're embarking on? Who's in your tribe? And these tribe members might look a little different. Some tribe members are going to be a little perhaps triggered themselves or not understand what you're doing, and that's okay. But who's open to hearing that? Even one person that says, okay, I'm in this with you. I might not even be making all the same changes, but I support you. And that person might be somebody who is not in a bad way or linearly, but a little farther along in the process than you, who can believe in what you're doing, who might not be steeped in the same exact patterns. It also might be someone who is trying to make those exact changes. And you can keep each other accountable. Let each other know how the steps are going, even if it's a text every day or every few days. You know, look, when I wanted to have my Oreos on the couch and binge Netflix, I didn't do that 3 nights out of 5 this week. Awesome. Guess what? I did that 2 nights this week. It happened. Okay. And then you can honestly share with each other what's going on in the process. But inviting the reports is another crucial step. So this is a deep tapping in of gathering your spiritual, emotional, and community resources. What do you believe in? That higher power that is bigger than all of us, whatever that is for you, whatever your existing practice of connecting with that looks like, oh my gosh, invite that in spades. When you think you've done it enough, invite it in more. God, nature, universe, spirit, Christ, through your prayers, through your meditation, draw on that wisdom. Ter Borak calls it resourcing. This, we can ask from that experience outside ourselves for help. For you, it might be that quantum physics joining the vibration that is already here. I'm going to imagine myself being in this state of complete gratitude and receiving all divine support possible and put myself there. Because multiple realities can exist at the same time. And I am choosing that one. Even if our nervous, limbic system, brain, dear neural cortex, neural net functioning doesn't quite get all that yet, placing yourself there. Joe Dispenza is a beautiful resource for that. So call in that support system and try one that feels comfortable, useful, speaks your language, speaks to your truth while you're embarking on that journey. So really getting aligned with support. Come to that Inner Peace Rising Facebook page for support. Check in there. The communities that believe in conscious identity formation and change are there. They're out there. And we've got you. So whatever that looks like for you, just inviting that. And then getting clear on your intention. So if you're listening, you can take a pause here and write something down on a sticky note, type it into your phone as a message to yourself. What's the change you're making? Why are you making it? And state that in intention. Written in the first person as though it is already happening, because it matters. This is the affirmation that you repeat to yourself on a daily basis. And there are a lot of tools to strengthen some of that new neural net functioning around that. We won't get into that in this podcast, but get really clear on what that intention is that you're moving to, looking forward to. I am loving myself through feeding myself amazing food every day. I love myself through moving my body in ways that are nurturing. I love myself through drinking in moderation. I love myself through spending time with others that are loving and respectful of me only, no one else. Whatever that looks like for you, just a few examples. And if there are a couple of things that you'd like to take with you in the why, I'm going to offer up a couple questions for you. And these are just for however deep you want to go. We're playing in the sandbox, right? So again, what's the cost? What's the cost to benefit ratio of not loving yourself more right now? If you stayed on the current trajectory, a lot of us would probably be fine. As Gay Hendricks says, we might be operating in our zone of competence, but not our zone of genius. What would it look like to open and love yourself more? To open to all the support that's possibly available. Oh my gosh, what would that look like? What would be possible? How would that benefit your loved ones? So if you look at the trajectory of staying where you are, project ahead a year, 5 years, 10 years, what would the impact of that be, of not making the change? And then look ahead. What would the trajectory look like if you made this change? If you upgraded your love, your vibration, 15, 20%, whatever that looks like, what would that look like in a year, 5 years, 10 years? What impact would that have on your family, on your community, on your partnership? And maybe in the past, where have you opened to a support? Where have you opened to that divine support in all ways that you believe and know serve you, and seen a difference? Where have you bravely opened up to others and been vulnerable and know that that's been helpful for you? So we all have proof in our history. We might not focus on it because typically we focus on problems and trying to avoid them. Our brain wants to keep us safe, right? Bless our dear brain, wants to keep us safe. But what are the exceptions to that? Where have you been vulnerable, opened up to help, and you got it and it made a change? I promise you there's an event in your history where this happened. You might have to look a little bit, but that's okay. So source your own database for the evidence that this exists and is possible. I promise you it is. I asked for help. I got it. It was okay. It was okay. That's your proof. So put that up on a sticky note. You can tell maybe that I have sticky notes all over my house. Whatever your version of that reminder is. Remember you did that? You vulnerably asked for help. It went well. Remember that time? Oh, yeah, that's proof. Okay, bring that in. And then stay reminded of the support as you go in your process. Whatever that looks like, track your intention. Keep that intention around you. Let somebody you love or trust or your accountability buddy, maybe that's all three, let them know what your intention is. Because, oh my gosh, then there's no hiding. I know. But let them know what it is. And that really amps up our trajectory, letting one person know. It's beautiful. Okay. So here's the why. That's our first part. And then getting clear on the how. How do we go about doing this? Oh my goodness. Now I know why it matters and what I want to do. Oh gosh, now I got to face it, right? When I was coming out of my, still actually not coming out of my, but dealing with my grief and major moving transition, when I looked at where I wanted to go, it felt very overwhelming. And gratefully, I was surrounded in love and patience. That was mirrored to me all the time. Thank God. But where I wanted to go still felt overwhelming. I quite frankly couldn't imagine not shutting down at the end of the night, at the end of the day. Because, you know, we go through the hard things, right? We still need to work and take care of our families and do all the things and be as present as possible. And at the end of the day, I just had to curl into a little grief ball and sometimes drink my wine and eat my carbs or watch my Netflix and just go away. Because the grief was so big, I couldn't fathom anything else for a while. So thankfully, being surrounded in this dear coaching field and courses and resources, I came across for about the 20th time, but it became personally meaningful, the work of James Clear, Atomic Habits, and this notion of the 1% rule, and also known as the Kaizen approach, and making tiny changes every day. Now, gosh, I had coached folks through this myself in different ways, but this became very grounded and real for me. It got real. When I thought about going to the gym 5 days a week, even years as a yoga practitioner, I didn't want to move my body. I wanted to stay. I wanted to stay where I was and curl up in a ball. So the compassionate way to begin that, the how, what I told myself was just move your body. Just get up and move your body. And at first it was once a week. Get up and move your body. So it even started smaller than that. For me, it was, I had left my communities of yoga practice and places and classes that felt safe and places where I walked in either as a teacher or as a student and was immediately held, loved, supported, celebrated just by walking in. That's pretty reinforcing. I didn't have that in my new community. So one goal, find a gym, find a place to practice. I gave myself a good chunk of time to do that. I worked with my coach on accountability for that one. I found one. Then my goal was, okay, get in there. 1 day a week. Because I set the small goal enough that I could succeed. If I didn't make it, and if we don't make it, right, then we build up that history of failure, which is very wise. But when we're trying to bravely move forward, we want to make the small goal, the 1% change that we know we can't say no to for ourselves. So we build up that efficacy background, that support, right? I could go to the gym 1 day a week. It might be me getting on the elliptical for 15 minutes. And that's all I did. And then I rewarded myself. Music for me is a big deal. I made sure I had a damn good playlist that was going to feel good to listen to. So if I was moving my body and listening to music that fueled my soul, I knew I was rewarding myself. And over time, that grew. That grew. Over time. That started to grow exponentially because change grows exponentially. That grew now to 15 months later, a 5-day-a-week gym practice. It evolved into weightlifting, which I had never done. Oh my gosh, what a fish out of water I am in those classes. It's hilarious. There's so much grace in comparison, I can't even tell you. it evolved into bravely trying some new things in yoga. It evolved into all different kinds of things. It evolved into significant weight loss from a loving place the first time in my life, probably. But it started with just move your body. That was my affirmation. Just move your body. And the how, to take it back out of the example realm for a minute, is getting with that small goal. What's your 1% change? Don't worry, you'll be ready to up it eventually. 1%. I promise you, watch the hockey stick growth that happens, but start small. SMART goal setting is specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, timely. So in the course of your very busy week, what can you not say no to in the pattern of loving behavior to yourself, of accepting yourself that way? Might be gym going. It might be prayer practice. It might be writing down your morning pages, meditation. It might be disengaging from a relationship that is toxic. But whatever that looks like, what's the 1% change that you can say yes to today? Right? And then developing a consistent practice so that your nervous system starts to lean back into the support of new regularity. Our limbic system just wants a container. Our deer spirit brain, when we get tired, just wants to know what's familiar. So a new habit that is consistent starts to create a new container, right? What does that look like for you? And there's so much around that too. One thing I really love is habit stacking. So something you're already doing becomes a trigger for the new reminder, self-talk, or the new more supportive practice. Hopefully we all brush our teeth every day. What's one thing you can tell yourself while you're brushing your teeth? Many of us put our keys in the car. Can you take a deep breath while that happens? When you see a text from a particular person that's triggering, can it be your cue, your new trigger that you reclaim to tell yourself something different or take a self-loving action that is more skillful? Just a few ideas there. And finally, this gets a little bit into our why, but how can we start to tap into our inner why self, that wisdom from source, throughout this process? So one of the things that we covered in group this week was what's in your way, right? I love myself, but this pattern's in my way. I love myself, but this extra weight on my body is in the way. This pattern of addiction or overuse is in my way. This lacking of something, of partner, of the job I want is in my way. And it could be addiction to anything, my friends. Could be that addiction to criticizing yourself. Could be addiction to people-pleasing. Raise your hand. I raise my hand to that one. Could be addiction to weed, booze, anything that we use to check out, numb ourselves because it's too much. Yes, been there, right? Is it the lack of love for your body as it is? Are there patterns from family of origin? We all have the blocks. Yeah. So I'm going to turn this on its head for a moment. Any coping strategy that you've got around those barriers? There was some younger version of yourself that developed that coping strategy as survival. Thank her or him for that. Thank them for creating that. That coping strategy was really wise at the time. It was the strategy that maybe kept you alive. It was the strategy that helped you out of a tough situation. Maybe it was a strategy as a kid that made sure you were seen. Or if it wasn't safe to be seen, made sure you stayed out of the way, nice and quiet, safe, good little girl or boy, you name it. This deep, innate sense of wisdom and survival and powerful warrior within each of us creates strategies to get through what we got to get through. So I deeply invite you, if you'd ever like to do an inner child meditation or a tapping into your wise self meditation, that to connect with that age of yourself that made that. Some of us are very clear, right? A lot of mine came up between the ages of 5 and 10. Got very, very skillful at meeting the needs of others so well that I just went away. I didn't even know what my needs were, but damn, everybody else was safe, taken care of, good stuff because of what was going on. That became one of my wise strategies in the world. So I go back and I thank that little girl a lot. Thank you for coming up with that. It really serves me in my life in a lot of ways. But when I get left behind, or when I don't even know how I am because I've been taking care of everybody else first, that's my trigger. That's my sign to come back and check in with her. Oh, what do you need, sweetie? I'm so sorry. Let's check in. What do you actually need? And it's okay for you to make noise with me now because I'm reparenting you. I got you. Let's check in. What do we need? Let's meet that need first. And then we can go back out into the world and see what's actually realistic here, right? So thank that version of yourself whenever you can for the strategy that came up, even if it's a really problematic strategy right now, even if there's shame around it. Oh my gosh, shame kills progress and evolution like nobody's business. It has no place in our repertoire, I promise. That coping strategy popped up for a reason. So start with thanking the version of you that created it. And if that's a consistent practice you can adapt, then oh my gosh, I invite you to it. So when we look at new habits, the practice, that consistency is key, right? Habits that mimic self-love and acceptance. Here's a couple things to take a look at. Window shop on the people who've got this down a little bit more than you. We all have different stages in our evolution, right? Look at the people. You might know them personally. They might be, you know, role models in the field, you name it. But what do they have going on? What do they do? I used to window shop on relationships all the time. Ooh, I really like that partnership. I'd like to cultivate that. Interesting. Ooh, I'm window shopping on that partnership. I see qualities I never want in my life. Interesting, right? Look where we want to go as that upward movement of trajectory. What are those habits? What are those people doing? Right? People who love themselves do this thing. What version of that can you adapt as your new habit? Again, applying the Kaizen approach, 1% rule. Right? Go, there's inspiration everywhere. And what I love about looking at people who have this down a little bit more than us, it takes the evil part out of comparison, right? Oprah says comparison's the root of the, she says comparison is a thief of joy, which I love. Because we could look at what other people do, you know, the Facebook comparisons, the best high reel of all time, and feel crap because our lives aren't reflecting that. What if we were looking at the examples of others as inspiration for what's possible? And then ask somebody, hey, can I take you to lunch? How do you do this? Maybe you're already friends with that person. Maybe that person isn't in your life yet, but you're window shopping on those behaviors. And pick one, not 27, pick one behavior. Get it down to your personal 1%. What does that look like, right? And then finally, how are you going to track it in a way that makes sense to you? Habit tracking is data, my friends. And I didn't used to be into this at all, but man, numbers don't lie. So we could think we'd be doing a good job, but when I actually write down every day what time I go to bed or how much maybe I eat more than I'm actually hungry for, it's not a reason to beat myself up. It just gives me a clear picture of what's going on rather than my perception or my story. It helps enhance my memory in real time so that if I'm still trying to make some small changes, which I always am, in different pacing, then I can actually see what the data is, what the information is. It's impersonal in that way, and I can see where I honestly want to make some progress. Or where I can congratulate myself. When the numbers build up for your success, again, we can catapult ourselves based on that proof of experience into another layer of reality that our whole dear system, emotionally, physically, spiritually, limbically, our whole response to stress can start to change because we have proven to ourselves we can do it. And I promise you, you can. So my final part on consistency is key, is to really note the resistance that comes up, the thoughts, beliefs, the self-sabotage behaviors, and say, oh, wherever you can, have some compassion on that too. The resistance is information. It's usually that younger version of ourselves still tugging at our pant leg, begging for attention. No, my needs aren't getting met yet. Please see me. I'm not ready. That's okay too. Oh my goodness. So if it's hard to have compassion for the resistance that you see, I love Kristen Neff's research. Those of you who work with me hear me say this all the time. Her work is on self-compassion. She has actually proven why self-compassion is a good idea, why it helps us make change, why being mean and critical of ourselves and our self-talk actually thwarts the process of change. So if we can treat ourselves like we would a dear friend or a beloved, what would you say to yourself when that resistance comes up? Right? Name it, see it, it's okay, right? This is how that process of change is sometimes two steps forward, one step back. That's all right. Change is not linear, hardly ever, because we're humans having a human experience, right? So honor that resistance. It's my own form of accountability to keep honoring mine while I share my journey with you in this series. So if you're looking at something, couple things to wrap up with. How will you track your habits? There are so many apps out there you can download. Is it something you put on your refrigerator? Mine is a tracker in my refrigerator that I can write down. I'm old school. I feel grateful when I get to put the smiley face on the habit I'm tracking every day. Sometimes it's a not smiley face, and I get to see my tally at the end of the week. How'd I do? How often will you check in with your accountability buddy, and who is that for you in your life? And then imagine you're talking to that small, scared self, that version that came up with those coping strategies, right? Thank her for that. Thank him for that. But come from the voice of the wise parent, the wise teacher, the compassionate one, and tell her what she really needs to hear. From the voice of a dear friend, what would they say to that version of her? And finally, how can you call on support, that divine source, in any way that you align with in your belief system? And how do you feel that relief come through? So, dear ones, this is the why, the how. And this is not the end-all, be-all of the why, the how. These are just my thoughts, my dear, sweet 20-year trajectory up to the last year, my example, and what we're looking at in the Love in the Mirror course right now. And some of the wisdom quotes from our incredible, incredible women in this class. It's okay to make mistakes. I realized I was chasing skinny, and instead I needed to embrace myself. One of them realized that she had no compassion at all for her older version of herself. One realized she had no compassion for the younger version at all. One realized that she is depriving the world of her gifts, and that's why it matters to love herself more. You're not alone in this. Even if you're listening to this podcast, in wherever you are, in your kitchen, in your car, you are not alone in this. People are doing this with you. So I invite you to innerpeacerising.com, facebook.com/innerpeacerising, and connect with us any part on the journey where you are for resources, you name it. And I thank you very much for being with us. In the meantime, look forward to next episode. When we start to look at this stuff, things get stirred up. So we're going to look at stir it up. What happens when we're stirring up our beliefs, our old coping strategies, how to gracefully or sometimes not welcome it. And have tea with our fear. Oh my gosh. Don't worry. The podcast won't be scary. But we're going to name the stuff that might be. So thank you again, everyone, for being here. I'm Shannon Bodie. This is Love in the Mirror. Dear ones, thank you for being here with me on this episode of the Love in the Mirror podcast. Tune in next week for Name It, Stir It, and Welcome It, Inviting Fear to Tea. That's what we're looking at on our next episode that mirrors the Love in the Mirror course in real time. Until then, let's all take a deep breath and invite the peace that we know is right here. It's possible. I'll take a deep breath with you. I'm Shannon Bodie, your host. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Love in the Mirror podcast. Have a great week, everyone.